morning, everybody. Morning, everybody. Senate Finance, Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016. It's about 10 after 9. We're going to walk through the amendments today. We've asked David Teal to come and present to us. I don't think we have any other business to come before us other than these amendments. And so with that, David, if you'd come up here. And ladies and gentlemen, just go ahead and feel free to ask questions as they occur to you. Hi, Lacey. If you both would state your name and affiliation for the record, and let's get started.
I'm David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance.
Lacey Sanders, Operating Budget Coordinator for Legislative Finance.
Go ahead.
And you ask us to walk through the amendments, which we're happy to do, understanding that we present a more technical view. We're not presenting, defending these amendments as OMB might, and from their policy perspective. We're just saying, here are the amendments, here's what they do.
That's what we want. Thank you.
Okay. So there are really three categories of amendments. I think it'll help you understand them if to break them into the categories. The first is spreading the unallocated reductions. And the second is the numbers section amendments, typically known as Section 1 amendments. Those kinds of amendments would go to subcommittees for review. Then there are language amendments, which typically are not assigned to subcommittees for review. And are your handouts labeled with A, B, C, or do you? They're not. Okay, there is a summary printout from our budget system that is just a two-page report, and that is just a standard agency summary report. This report reflects all three of the categories I just mentioned, the unallocated, the numbers, and the language. To summarize, agency reductions are just over $950,000, and there's a large statewide reduction of $46.5 million. That's due to the decision to back off on pension obligation bonds and instead just pay the actuarial recommendations. So we'll talk about these individually as we as Lacey goes through the transactions.
David, you said the $46 million was what? I got distracted there just for a second. The statewide was regarding what?
It's POBs, pension obligation bonds.
Okay. That's fine.
At the bottom of the page under statewide items,
yeah,
you'll see a reduction in debt service of $219 million, and then state assistance to retirement goes up. That is, both of those changes are related to the decision not to issue pension obligation bonds.
Right.
And to simply pay the actuarial recommendations for state assistance to retirement. Now, if you look at this sheet, which is a summary of the unallocated reductions, on this sheet, the yellow column is probably the one that you want to focus on. It tells you whether an agency assigned the unallocated reductions somewhere within the agency. If you see a blank or a hyphen, really, that means that the agency very cleanly distributed the unallocated reductions within the agency at net zero. There are some agencies, however, like Department of Administration, that had a $957,000 unallocated. They allocated $506,000 of it, leaving $450,000 unallocated. So there were no additional cuts taken, and this is something that's purely up to the committee. As you give instructions to your subcommittees, you can either take OMB's advice that there, no additional cuts could be found, or you can have your subcommittees say, we're finding that $450,000 somewhere. There may be some confusion about this because you look at Department of Natural Resources. They ended up with some of those unallocated, but then they also took a large reduction in the North Slope gas commercialization. So if you net, if you count that as an unallocated reduction, then they may have actually reduced more statewide than the unallocated reduction size. On the other hand, you could argue that, well, that wasn't even anything that's in the budget yet.
Right.
It's not approved, it's merely a request. So reducing your request is very different than taking a cut in your existing budget. That's up to the committee, however you want to decide to either accept what OMB has done, take more cuts in committee, it's up to you. Then third,
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Hoffman.
Are you aware of how each of these departments use the vacancy factor to address their unallocated reductions in increasing their vacancy factor? Was that one method that was used?
If I might.
Go ahead, Lacey.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. It varies from agency to agency. There are some agencies, one that comes to mind, and I'm speaking from my memory here, so I apologize if I have the wrong department, but the Department of Law, I believe, increased their vacancy rate. But some agencies, like the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, allocated their unallocated distribution by taking a mandatory 9-day furlough for exempt positions. So, and other agencies took other reductions. For example, they deleted positions that had general funds associated with them. So it's going to vary from agency to agency. We can provide a report specifically on these transactions to the committee if you'd like.
I would like to see that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Olson, did you have a question?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Thiel.
You've got two other additional reports. One is one from our system. It's the lengthy one. I think you've got 18 pages. We printed that out simply because it contains the transaction notes that are actually incorporated into the OMB transactions. That makes the report lengthy and hard to follow. So you also have an Excel summary sheet that walks through those transactions, has some of our notes on it in the far right column. And rather than try to walk through the lengthy report, I think the spreadsheet will be much easier to follow, and Lacey will just start on line 2 and go from there, if that's all right.
And if I might clarify, the spreadsheet and report that you have in front of you are all of the remaining transactions outside of the distribution for the unallocated reductions. So,
point to that one. Which one is?
This is an 18-page.
These are all the outside the unallocated reductions.
Yeah. These are the ones we're going to walk through today.
Mr. Chairman, what I probably should explain on that is the unallocated reduction transactions are, I don't know, 100 or more of them easily.
All right.
And they get probably more complex than you really care about. You'll see them in subcommittee, and the single page sheet tells you that most agencies sum to zero. In other words, they did allocate the unallocated as we expected them to do. There are a few that didn't, but to walk through all of those transactions would just be mired in detail.
I understand.
So,
Senator Machicki?
I just might have missed this. I apologize. The print is small enough. I actually needed glasses this time. But how do we reconcile, just in general, the $2.638 million remaining unallocated? If we were counting on that reduction, do you have any suggestions on how we apply that elsewhere?
Through the chair, my recommendation would be to do whatever you choose. The House subcommittees are varied in their response. Some say fine with corrections. We're not going to even look for an additional $450,000 that they didn't take. There are other subcommittees that have looked at this and take some or all of the unallocateds and do make further reductions. So again, it's your choice as a committee and as subcommittees how you want to treat this. We're simply providing information that tells you that $2.6 million of the transactions that you expected to be allocated to specific places in the budget were not allocated.
Senator McKinnon? Oh, Senator Machicki, were you finished? Do you have a follow-up? Go ahead, Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Teel, this is my 10th session, and I believe I've served eight of them on finance. Is it typical that the administration, I've been through three governors, is it typical or has there been an instance where a governor gives a budget to a legislative body with massive unallocated cuts? Have we experienced this before?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, we experienced some of it last year, and Ledge Finance's response to that was that unallocated reductions should be rarely used, and if they're used, it's a legislative prerogative, but that the governor can't submit or shouldn't submit unallocated reductions because his job in submitting the budget is to tell you where reductions are taken, not to tell you that we don't know exactly how we're going to take these reductions, but we'll find money somewhere. So that at this point in the budget process, we wouldn't expect to see unallocated reductions. We expect to see unallocated reductions taken only if the legislature is unable to find, while working with the agencies, a spot to actually put a cut and then say, but we need to cut more here or want to cut more in this, somewhere in this agency, but we don't know exactly where, so here's an unallocated reduction.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Teel, this administration provided unallocated cuts at the start of last legislative session. I didn't have it in the budgets that I was responsible for. Can you give me an example so that I just know the magnitude of the use of unallocated cuts by this administration?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, if I understood your question correctly, I'm going to try and back up a little bit. Last session, the salaries for FY16 were included in the budget as a one-time item. The direction is that those would be removed in 2017. The governor's budget reflected those salaries as being removed and at the same time added an increment back for an equivalent amount in each area of the budget.
For a net zero.
In addition, they included an unallocated reduction equivalent to those Inc. M's in their governor's submission. The direction from the finance committees was that they did not want to see the unallocated reductions because that it's difficult to make further reductions if you don't know where you're cutting from. And so the governor's amended budget now spreads those unallocated reductions. So there's a trickle-down effect. next.
Mr. Chairman, if I could try again, that wasn't my question.
Okay,
my question is not about the end of last legislative cycle, because I am well aware of what the Senate proposed and the cooperation or lack thereof to reach conclusion during the last third special session. What I asked is, this administration came into this budget with unallocated cuts at a large magnitude that I'd never seen before. And I was wondering, in any of the 9 years that I've served or prior to that, whether we ever saw an administration come in with these massive unallocated cuts and deliver that as a budget to a legislative body. I know how we end. We do unallocated at the end when we can't receive consensus. But in trying to understand where we're going right now, with your experience, if it's longer than mine, or if there's something that I didn't see because of the budgets that I had, did another administration start the process with unallocated cuts?
And David, before you answer, or Lacey, would you distinguish as well, the governor's budget last year was actually the previous governor's budget. And so if you're answering questions about unallocated that this administration may have provided, it would have been through the amendment process. So I think, so go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I think you probably hit it. This is the first time that I've seen a governor submit a budget with unallocated reductions in it. Okay. That is a new budget. Yeah. There were unallocated last year.
Yeah, got it. Okay, thanks. Senator Olson.
On that point, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Teal, you've obviously been a director of the alleged finance since the last millennium, so you've been here a long period of time. And even before that, before you were the director, you were with alleged finance, so I appreciate that historical aspect to it. But I do remember that when I first came on board, that Tony Knowles was the governor, and we were in the same kind of situation where we were deficit spending, had a CBR drawdown that was looking pretty bleak. And if I'm mistaken in my memory, he also had unallocated reductions. Is that not true?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it may be. We generally look at the end product, and to tell you the truth, I can't remember. It's entirely possible that at some point a governor has submitted unallocated reductions in the budget proposal that comes over on December 15th, but it wouldn't be a common occurrence.
One last question, Mr. Chairman, has to do with, as we look at these unallocated reductions that were there, at least you say you can't remember what happened, and we all can't, we have fading memories, you know, it's one of those things that's a reality of being human. However, we're still dealing with this situation that I think needs to be addressed.
Just in response to that, as I've said, Mr. Chairman, how you address it is up to the committee. What you know is that the governor did not do what you perhaps expected him to do, which was allocate the full $16 million of his share of the unallocated cut.
Yeah. Senator Bishop, I thought you had a question, and then I went to Senator McKinnon. Is that correct?
No.
No. Okay.
No, thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Teal.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, I think it's probably time to turn to the spreadsheet, and Lacey can just walk through the individual transactions.
So that's the one with the how many pages?
The four.
The four pager. Okay, go ahead, Lacey.
Thank you. I'm going to start with the Department of Administration on line number 2. The Department of Administration is requesting $750,000 of general fund program receipt. They plan to contract with a fee collection agency for that agency to collect accounts receivables from multiple departments. This spending will pay for that service. D DOA states that if 5% of the current receivables portfolio of approximately $500 million is collected, the state would receive about $25 million. One note which finance has is we wondered if there would be an offsetting decrement if you're paying for a service to be provided outside of the state and that service is no longer being paid for by the departments internally, would there be an offsetting decrement? Item number 3 and 4 for the Department of Administration go together. Therefore, the statewide single audit, there's a request for $1.4 million of general funds. The first item for $932,000.1 is for a multi-year funding with the new accounting system coming online, the IRIS system. They're working through an increased workload due to that new system coming on. The second item is for $450,000 of UGF funding to pay for legislative audit. They provide services for the Division of Finance, and this is the payment. It is increasing from the existing amount of $300,000 to $750,000.
Senator Machicki?
Why do we have on line number 3 $932,000, and you talked about 1.4?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I was combining items number 3 and 4 together for a total of $1.4 million between the two lines.
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have a breakdown, or did they provide a breakdown on the single outsourcing the single audit by fiscal year between 17 and 18 for the $932,100?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't have that information in front of me. We can follow up with the Department of Administration and the Office of Management and Budget on that.
And was there any justification in asking for FY18 funds this year when they should be considered with the next legislative session?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we can look into that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Teal?
Mr. Chairman, I should point out that this is a pretty rough review of the governor's amendments. We had not finished that review yet, and we still have some unanswered questions, but I would urge committee members to ask, as Senator Hoffman did. This may be something that we would have asked, but it's going to help us in our review if you continue to tell us what you're interested in so we can find answers.
Certainly. Okay. Continue.
Thank you. Item number 5 is in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. In the FY17 governor's budget, the tourism marketing program would have continued under the department's purview. This amendment transfers the money to the grant line, as well as reduces the receipt authority for statutory designated program receipts. Essentially, what is happening is the department is moving back to a grant to a named recipient through the Alaska Tourism ATIA, which is the Alaska Tourism Industry Association, and the receipts that are collected for the visitors' pay brochure and the booths that they run will be collected directly by the ATIA in the future.
Okay.
Questions?
And Mr. Teal?
Just to summarize that, I think you could probably say that the Department of Commerce is turning over the tourism marketing activities to the private sector.
And this restores it to the way they used to do it, doesn't it? Okay, go ahead.
Item number 6 is again in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. With declining energy costs, the governor's office submitted a decrement eliminating the entire statewide project development and alternative energy and efficiency allocation within the budget. You can see a listing on the spreadsheet of all of the fund sources that are included in that. One concern legislative finance has with this that was brought to our attention by the department was the renewable energy funding that's being eliminated. There are approximately 133 outstanding grants under the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. This reduction decrements the grant funding that's managing those grants. So there's just one concern that this committee may want to address with the department. Item 7 and item 8 are in the Department of Education and Early Development's budget, adding back both Parents as Teachers and Best Beginnings and the pre-kindergarten grants for a total of $2.8 million.
Senator Machicki.
Just a quick question back from the previous one. I'm just trying to identify and fund source what REN Energy is.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, the REN Energy item, you're asking what that is? That's the money that is managing the grants. It's coming directly from the Renewable Energy Fund. So it's a designated general fund fund source.
Through the chair, the issue here is that the department eliminated their grant monitoring capability on the grounds, presumably, that they'll be issuing no new grants, but they still have 133 grants outstanding that they need to monitor. So some, or perhaps all, of that $2 million is something that they'll be asking for to be returned in the budget process. I don't know if that's going to come up in subcommittee or whether it will be a governor's amendment, but I guess I presume that if they're going to continue to monitor the outstanding grants, they will need some money to do that.
Senator Olson.
And then Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at these 133 outstanding grants, how much is that total up to?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we'll have to talk to the Alaska Energy Authority and get that information for you.
But that's roughly under $2 million, correct?
Through the chair, no, Senator Olson. These are the previous grants that were appropriated in prior years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Bishop.
You're just, David, it's a word of caution and a marker for us. I mean, I think I fully understand what you're saying is the... we got outstanding grants. We want to make sure the money's being spent appropriately, and we need to maybe we got to stay focused on that. And that includes $2 million to do that. I mean, right now.
Chair, Senator Bishop, we have not finished with this. We look at this as it doesn't take $2 million to monitor the outstanding grants. Some of this may be for other purposes as well. We haven't broken that down yet, so we can't give you an amount just for the grant monitoring.
Senator Machicki? I thought you had a question. Okay. Go ahead, Lacey.
Thank you. Continuing on item number 9, the Department of Education and Early Development is requesting $100,000 of federal receipts to digitize newspapers. This funding will pay for one non-perm position for the duration of the project.
Senator Hoffman?
Is that an ongoing program or is that a new program, digitizing?
Through the chair, my understanding is that this is a new grant that they're receiving funding for.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the information we received did not have a timeline on it. I'm not certain how long it will go.
Thanks. Go ahead.
On page 2, item number 10, the Office of the Governor is requesting $29,000 of statutory designated program receipts to receive a grant from the Pew Charitable Trust. The grant funding will allow the governor's office or the Division of Elections to participate in a data sharing agreement, and the grant would pay for 50% of the initial mailing to unregistered voters. The remaining 50% would come from the Help America Vote Act funding, which is currently in a capital project. Item number 11 in the Department of Law is restoring a decrement that was made in the Governor's 17 budget, restoring the Dillingham office. After further consideration, the Governor's office decided to restore the cut that was submitted and maintain the current level. It will have an attorney and a one support staff in the office. Item number 12 in the Department of Law is requesting $50,000 of tobacco cessation education funding. Is a one-time item. Due to a multi-state arbitration with tobacco companies, it is expected that they will need this funding beginning in FY16 and it will extend into FY17. This is for attorney time, travel costs, and arbitration proceedings, and potential expert witnesses.
Senator Dunleavy?
Chair, just if you can help me out, a quick clarification. Was the money from the settlement originally intended for education, like in K-12 education, or was it, when they're referring to education, educating folks to stay away from smoking and tobacco products?
The chair, it was the latter.
Thanks.
Item number 13 in the Department of Law is a technical correction. The Governor's budget originally submitted a transaction for $18.5 million of AKLNG interagency receipts. Because the Department of Natural Resources has funding, UGF funding, under a fund code 1241, which is AKLNG, the money will needs to be reflected in the Department of Law's budget as interagency receipts. The difference is the money that comes directly from the AKLNG fund is fund code 1236, which is what they had reflected in their budget. It's because it's coming from the Department of Natural Resources, it needs to be reflected as interagency receipts, so we're not duplicating counting the money.
Go ahead.
Item number 14 is related to the previous item. They're reducing that interagency authority by $1 million, so now it will be a total of $17.5 million. Moving on to the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, item number 15 deletes a division operations manager. It's a vacant position in the Air Guard facilities maintenance. My understanding is that this is a position, middle management position. You have a director and then you have a middle management position, and they're eliminating that position. Item number 16 is the Alaska Military Youth Academy. They are deleting 16 vacant unfilled positions, and the authority that went with them is uncollectible receipt authority. In previous years, the Alaska Military Youth Academy received their funding through the Department of Education in Education and Early Development. Two years ago, that was changed, and the money for the Alaska Military Youth Academy goes directly to them as general funds instead of passing through the Department of Education. They retained excess receipt authority on their books, and this eliminates that. Item number 17 and 18 go together. They're both reductions of vacant positions in the Alaska Aerospace Corporation. Just an additional note, there is language in the operating bill that allows aerospace to receive and expend additional receipts if they come up with some type of contract that they need to do work for and need to establish positions to do that. They have the ability to work with the governor's office and get those positions established.
On that,
Senator Hoffman,
would they have to go to LBNA, or is that a decision with language in the budget that does not require that?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the language in the budget allows them to receive and expend those receipts without going to LBNA.
Thank you.
Item number 19 is a summary of a very large detailed transaction in your packet of information. They are reducing funding for the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project by $7 million, UGF. This has to do with timing issues on the AK LNG project. Really high summary on that one. On to page 3, item number 20, the Department of Revenue is requesting one-time funding of $50,000 of unrestricted general funds due to cash logistics for marijuana tax payments that they'll be beginning to receive. And item number 21 is for the Mental Health Trust Authority to add a position and $150,000 of Mental Health Trust admin receipts for data analysis and policy planning. Okay, I'm going to turn this over to David. He's going to talk about the statewide items.
David, go ahead.
Rather than go through each transaction on line 23 through 30, probably easiest to just summarize this as the administration has made a decision not to issue pension obligation bonds. That will reduce debt service, anticipated debt service costs, and you'll see two large negative numbers in line 23 and 24. At the same time, because you're now not depositing money from the bond proceeds, you need to go back to the original actuarial recommendations for deposits for state assistance to retirement, I should say. And that's $99 million for PERS and $117 for PERS. So the net change there is a reduction of about $46 or $47 million. In addition to that, there was a $12 million supplemental to cover the cost of issuing those pension obligation bonds. We expect the supplemental will be reduced by that amount, but that didn't happen in this set of amendments. Okay. So the total reduction would be $59 million.
And is that a reduction? That's not a reduction year to year, is it? Or is that what you just said?
Mr. Chairman, that would completely depend on the earnings on the bonds and so on, because what you would be doing if you issued pension obligation bonds is replacing your state assistance cost for retirement with debt service costs.
Right.
And since you never know whether the return would be higher than your debt service cost, it's difficult to say what would happen in the future. This is a one-time reduction in 17 for going forward, you will continue to pay the actuarial recommended rates, costs, and those costs are projected to increase year by year by year.
David, all I'm trying to figure out is the fiscal year 17 reduction is reflected in this language. I know it's all language.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Rather than issuing bonds,
right,
and the debt service on those bonds would exceed the normal state assistance to retirement deposits. So there's a one-time savings in FY17 of about, 43 in 17, another 12 in 16 for bond issuing costs.
By not bonding. Okay.
What happens in 18 and 19 is that your costs will go up. So lines 32 through 34 are fund transfers. Line 32 reflects the governor's decision to back off on a planned deposit of $5 million to the Renewable Energy Fund. It was submitted in December and now determined that they're not going to make that deposit. 33 and 34 relate to money for dividends. They cancel This is just reflects money flowing first from the general fund, the royalty proceeds, over to the earnings reserve account, and then another transfer from the earnings account to the dividend fund. There's also a supplemental change that we expect to happen that would delete the $1.4 billion for the FY 16 dividend. Right now that, dividends have been paid in October 15, which is FY 16, and beginning in FY 17, you would begin paying dividends from royalties. So there's no need to take that $1.4 billion from the earnings reserve and put it in dividends. It's basically replaced by this $700 million appropriation, or $469 plus another $230 from the general fund in order to pay $1,000 dividends in FY 17. And just to clarify, since we have had some calls about what the dividend would be, this leaves a $700 million total cost, which is $1,000 per person. It does not take and add that $1,000 to the anticipated $1.4 billion, roughly $2,000 dividend that's being removed from last year's budget.
Okay. Senator Machicki?
Not right now, thanks.
Okay, go ahead, Darren. David?
On line 37, there's a wordage amendment. It refers to Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and their carry forward language. It's standard language year after year, and it was unintentionally omitted from this bill. So they're adding it. The next page, there is two fund capitalizations, both of which we exclude from our reports. There's a $926 million appropriation to the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund. And that's in addition to the $73 million that's already in the governor's budget, meaning an even $1 billion for tax credits. They submit that as a contingent appropriation. We say it's more appropriate as a fiscal note. If the bill passes, there will be a fiscal note attached to it. Same with the following line on 200, which is capitalization for the loan fund for tax credits. That would also be reflected in a fiscal note. And finally, there's a transaction here for the sustainable draw. That's from the earnings reserve account to the general fund. Originally, it was submitted as $3.2 billion annually, and now it's at $3.3 billion annually with this increase. So there's one thing here that is not reflected, which I believe is a major policy difference between OMB's view of dividends and Ledge Finance's view of dividends. OMB shows the earnings reserve account and the payment of dividends from it as designated general funds. That's as we've always done in the past. The implication here is that dividends don't contribute to the deficit, either positively or negatively. They don't compete with other expenditures, and they are treated more or less as money from the sky. We don't really track in the fiscal summary the amount of permanent fund earnings nor the amount of dividends that are paid out. It doesn't show as unrestricted general funds. We've discussed this internally for years, and we didn't want to distort the cash flow in the fiscal summary. And by that I simply mean that permanent fund earnings typically exceed the amount that's paid out as dividends. So if we were to include a dividend payment as a general fund expense and wanted to record permanent fund earnings as general fund revenue, it would distort what you have to spend, because you might have an extra $3, $4, $5 billion in earnings showing as revenue, which you by tradition have not spent. So it would show large surpluses every year. And we've never figured out a way to show those permanent fund earnings as revenue, therefore never show the dividends as a general fund expense. It finally dawned on us that we could give you an undistorted picture by showing only the revenue that's used for dividends. And that's the way we show it in our fiscal summary. We show both the $3.3 billion draw as general fund revenue, and we show the dividend cost of $700 million as revenue. Then we show the dividend cost of $700 million as an expense. So, again, we're treating the earnings reserve account as unrestricted general funds. And if there was ever any doubt in your minds about how that should be treated, because it is part of the permanent fund, you know, of course, that the earnings reserve has always been available for any purpose. We've simply not reflected it as unrestricted general funds. But now, as you begin depositing royalties and production tax, which are clearly unrestricted general fund revenues, our argument is that it changes the character of the fund, and we need to recognize that the earnings reserve account is truly an unrestricted general fund account. So there's no impact on the deficit of doing that, but I think it clarifies that permanent fund earnings are government expenditures just like any other government expenditures, and that they compete with K-12 or any other expenditures that you make.
Thank you, David. Questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, as we go back on, one of the curious things I have, we limited on page, on the second page there, line 15, you eliminated a maintenance person for the Air Guard there. I was wondering how many aircraft were being maintained by the Air Guard. Do you happen to have that number?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, I do not. We can follow up on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Thank you, Lacey. Thank you, David. Appreciate you coming up here.
We're done. There's no other business to come before the committee. We're adjourned.